Always Record, episode 14.
It's epic. I did, however, read your latest post this morning on everything. I like the Sleeping Beauty Aurora connection, especially.
It's funny. It was the first thing I thought of when Jason told me. But we were actually at Doug's house, and Jason came over and said, "Hey, there's been a shooting." You know, he's telling us the details, and he says Aurora, and I said, "Isn't that Sleeping Beauty?" I don't know why that was the first thing that popped into my head, but I didn't realize she's with Prince Philip. I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah, I read the post too, Alan, and kind of pretty heavyweight there, man. There's a lot going on. That's a 6-part series you got so far. It's pointing to something pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, as I had still all these things that I wanted to add to it. I did the first 5 parts back in, I don't know, May. And then I realized I didn't blog at all in June. But I had all these things piling up. And then, of course, the shootings happen. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. You know, we discussed it last week. But then when I saw that photo of the high school, Gateway High School, home of the Olympians, it just all fit together. And bear in mind, I cut out so much stuff out of this post. I just didn't really have the time to do it. But I was like, no, it's too much. So I just had to put it out there.
When did this woman in red gate crashing the Olympic parade happen? I mean, I guess that was the opening ceremony?
Yeah, that was opening ceremony.
And right below it, the picture of Jack Nicholson juxtaposed with Danny. Just, I mean, obviously I know that Nicholson was in that movie, but somehow the two images just really, the creep factor is on a 10. You know, it just hammers it all home in a way that I knew in my mind, but to see it there on the screen is really quite something. It's truly disturbing.
Huh. So, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I
see. Okay. Is the echo still there? I just plugged in headphones, so.
No, that's so much better. That did it.
Oh, really? Cool. Okay, so, yeah, I didn't... So, here, let me give you the article that was the reason why I thought that Woodstock and the lunar landing were at the same time.
It's actually like a month later.
Apart.
Yeah, it's a month later.
It's a month apart, but this is like a really good article I read like maybe 2 years ago on all basically looking at the Dionysian Apollo thing and all the synchronicities through time of basically close occurrences that reflect those archetypes back and forth. It's really neat. So you don't have to read it now, obviously, but it's worth checking out. hadn't thought about it in a while.
So the moon landing happened a month before Woodstock.
A month after, right? Or I'd have to look it up again.
Because it was in August that Woodstock happened.
Yeah, it's a month after.
So that is the first big party of the moon children, of children who live in a world where man has landed on the moon.
Precisely, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Batman and Robin, the Joker, giving you the honor of being the first men killed on the moon. That's so good.
What's weird to me is I actually stumbled upon that, so that little Joker on the moon thing, I stumbled upon that just before leaving for Idaho. Now, there's another weird little thing here. I mean, it's just, you know, silly synchronicities. We all have tons of them, but well, as soon as we land in Idaho, Doug drives us to a New York pizza joint. And we're all, like, looking at each other, like, why? We just came from New York where there's actually New York pizza. Why are you taking us to a New York pizza joint? But whatever, that was, you know, Doug was being a wonderful host and was throughout the week, so it wasn't, like, a bad thing. I'm just, it was, like, kind of confusing. So we go there, and as we're sitting there, I'm listening to, there's Steve Miller playing, and then another Steve Miller song, and then another Steve Miller song. And I started having a conversation. I immediately picked up what it was. There were two classic Steve Miller greatest hits, like...
Fly Like an Eagle?
Well, no, I don't mean songs. I mean albums. They did a greatest hit, something like, I don't know, like 1964 to 69, and like 1970 to 74, or something like that. Considering these are loaded dates, I should probably have that accurate, but I'm just pulling this out of my memory. But so there's two of them, and what's really funny is that they put the Joker on both albums, even though obviously it didn't fall into both of those time periods. That was Steve Miller Band's biggest hit, so they're like, hey, how do we sell this other album with a bunch of songs people don't know? Let's throw the Joker on it.
Right, but did you catch that they're two big hits? Are the Joker
and
fucking Fly Like an Eagle. The Eagle has landed.
Exactly.
I fly like an eagle to the sea, fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. It's like the sea was... So the Pink Floyd song Echoes, which goes in sync with 2001 A Space Odyssey, right? They originally had all space imagery in the lyrics of the song, and you can look at the original lyrics, and it's all talking about outer space. And then they changed it to this underwater metaphor, but also overhead, the albatross hangs motionless upon the air. It's about a bird doing a long distance, which is what albatrosses do, right, over the sea. And then it goes down below into the depths. But it's interesting, just like it's the same kind of imagery. Of the bird on the long journey, which is basically what the lunar mission was. So that's interesting contrast, the Joker and the Fly Like an Eagle.
Oh, hell yeah. So, I mean, that's... it's like really funny. So we're having this whole conversation about the Joker as the Steve Miller song that day, and then that afternoon, like, so, you know... Jason comes over and tells us about the Batman shooting. So, you know, I just got off the plane, so. Just really, you know, interesting synchronicity, but I think there's something there, like, sort of beating over the head of this trickster. I don't know if I see it exactly as that, but I mean, you know, what else do you really see it as? But there's this... So you guys were mentioning this post that I just put up, but they specifically that comic book, that 1969 comic book, there's an interesting thing in there is that he's created a false, they're not really on the moon. This is, the Joker has this planetarium type projector, and he basically creates this false reality or a movie theater, essentially. He puts Batman and Robin in a cave and projects this lunar landscape upon it so that they think they're on the moon. Well, that's essentially them, the Joker and Batman in a movie theater on July 20th, 1969. So that's an eerie foreshadowing. But as Jason pointed out, idea of Jack Nicholson in The Shining, you know, like guys like Jay Widener and all that want to make the case that this is faking the moon landing. The Shining is evidence of faking the moon landing. Well, here you have Jack Nicholson as the Joker, and the Joker essentially faking the moon landing.
Weird. Have you seen that mockumentary? It's like an hour, maybe it's like an hour and a half long, maybe, of all the evidence supporting that theory.
Well, there's two. There's like, isn't there one called Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah, that might be what it's called. And it interviews Stanley Kubrick's wife, and she's all talking about it all. But it's fake.
It's a spoof.
It's a spoof. But what was weird was, is when I watched it, I was like, yeah, it's a spoof, but there's like certain elements here that are like really like, I don't know. He did a really convincing job. Like if you were stoned enough, you'd really believe it. but I like, I look up the guy who did it, and it was his first mockumentary, and he got all these awards for things he had done in the past, that were far from mockumentaries. And it was his, basically, he was making a statement with it that you can, you know, convince, you can do a convincing thing just faking it. Why am I getting awards when it's all just basically, I guess you're persuading someone, or you're kind of navigating them in such a way. He felt that there was something fake about documentaries, even when they're not trying to be mockumentaries. So, and that was his first attempt at that, which is really weird.
Okay, so he's saying that because documentaries that are so positioned in truth and trying to show you what really happened, that just by the virtue of it, the medium that you're telling the history of it, it's propagandized in some manner, regardless of how much you try to stay out of the way, that it's impossible for a director to stay out of the way when you're using editing, something like that.
Yeah,
I agree. I would agree with that.
Oh, wholeheartedly, like, yeah.
He's like, you put in the music and you do the whole thing, and it's just you're playing on emotion more than anything. There's that whole thing about that. If you get people, you know, emotionally believing what you have to say, everything else is secondary, you know. So it's kind of weird.
But isn't that essentially so? You know, in my mind, I'm just thinking back to this silly comic from the 60s with the Joker on the moon. I mean, basically, he's trying to convince them of something that's, you know, not true, basically by presenting an illusion. Now, again, this, you know, we see this with documentaries. The same is true of news footage and everything. I mean, this is why I think part of the reason why we're in the state we're in is that people don't trust anything that they see on the news. And I would argue, for the most part, with good reason. I think, you know, there's a ton of propaganda and false stories. We see, like, almost every other day, a story of someone exposing a photo in a newspaper that's been photoshopped.
Oh, yeah, like the fucking Osama bin Laden photo that they're showing all over Fox News, and then it came out that it was a guy who had died in a terrorist attack in England like a week before or something like that. And it was so obvious. You can see it was in the paper. Like, people in England recognized him. They're like, that's that fucking one guy who died in some accident, you know, something. And then they just, it was a simple Photoshop thing. But then the news just used it.
But, yeah. You know, and I've seen this week there's a photo from a newspaper showing like this quote unquote devastation in Syria, showing these like violent uprisings that we need to stop. And it's this man and this woman. The man's holding a child, there's a woman standing next to him, and they're standing in front of this completely blown out building. And then below it, someone put the actual photograph, which is the same man and child and woman standing just on a street, like walking down a street with nothing destroyed at all. So, you know, someone just photoshopped in a blown out building behind them. Or someone's photoshopping out the burnt out. You know, again, this is where we start getting into really interesting territory. Now everyone has Photoshop.
Even, yeah, I mean, I saw Ike and Tina Turner album.
That looked Ike pretty rare. It. Is that rare? I wanted to get that.
When did they get together? They used to play, huh?
You never heard
I don't know. Did he sing? He play guitar? What was his deal?
I think he sang and Chevy Chase played drums.
Oh, okay.
Well, I really like how the grooves, it's almost like they shapeshift into different kind of jams. It's really heavyweight playing going on in those albums.
Wizard rock. But there's, do you guys remember there was when Iran, this was a few years ago, Iran had said they had tested, you know, a few missiles, and what they show was that actually they only launched one or two missiles, but then they used the cloning mechanism in Photoshop to add additional ones. Which I thought was really funny was the American media pointing out, oh, Iran's faking their press release, they've actually launched these missiles. Meanwhile, you know, we have American media doing, it's always funny to me, you see if you look at RT News, the Russian news is always exposing fake stuff in American media, and American media is always exposing fake stuff in Russian media. And then you realize, well, they're both doing fake stuff. You know, it's like one wants to expose the other, but ultimately we have fakery going on all around.
Mm-hmm. Well, where are the standards, and who takes control of the standards? Because two of the first leaps that happened on the news after the shooting in Colorado was the twisting of the words of Holmes' mother, which was just unforgivable. How the reporter said, and when they asked her if James Holmes committed the crimes, she said, "That's the right, you have the right person." And that wasn't the context with which she said those words. They said, we have James Holmes, resident in Colorado. He lives here. Are you his mother? And she said, "You have the right person," just meaning that's my son. It wasn't, I know he's a sick and twisted, mentally ill monster. That sounds exactly like my son. It was just absolutely gross reporting, and whoever's responsible for that should lose their job. Mm. And then the other thing was, And the other thing was that they said, we ran a search of Tea Party members in that area, and there is a James Holmes registered to the Tea Party. And to connect, I mean, this is like something you'd expect out of a fifth grade, let's learn how to do the news type deal. It's a wonder what kind of stuff you don't catch.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, they're not. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just that the magnifying glass is so, it's looking at every detail. So we catch these things on this case, but on a random news story on a random day, how much, information is doctored to be more exciting
completely change the story. I mean, this is how I actually, the big reason that I got into conspiracy theory was noticing, you know, once YouTube really blew up, was that you could watch something on the news and they show like a 30-second clip of this person was arrested and, you know, beaten by the cops or something. Or they're saying, but the person really deserved it because, you know, whatever the story is. And then you could go to YouTube and you could watch the full 12-minute video that's not edited, and it presents a completely different story.
That's the Paul Harvey, and now you know the rest of the story.
And that's just if you watch unedited footage, it always presents something so drastically different. And my argument is that, you know, the conspiracy theory, the conspiracy theorists or alternative media, whatever phrase you want to use, is guilty of the same thing. This is why I kept making that point about the JFK speech. Everyone says, you know, everyone pulls out this quote. JFK says, we're opposed to secret societies and we were opposed to this. We have this monolithic conspiracy that we're faced with. And everyone lumps those together as if he's saying there's this monolithic conspiracy of secret societies. And you see that on almost every conspiracy website that deals with JFK is him talking about secret societies and a monolithic conspiracy. But when you read the full text of the guy's speech, it's not what he's talking about. It's not at all. Those are paragraphs and paragraphs apart. And he's saying, I know you don't like secrecy, such as secret societies, but... And then he goes on to say why he needs government secrecy. And then later says, the reason we need government conspiracy is because we're opposed by this monolithic conspiracy that is... he's saying...
Which is like communism. Russian,
communism, Russian spies, guerrillas, things like that. So it's really... You know, people like to cherry-pick quotes that... to me, this is really... We're in a state where if you don't do your own research and if you don't actually put the pieces together yourself or look at the unedited context, you could be really easily misled.
So James Holmes's father, Robert Holmes, is about to testify for the biggest bank fraud scandal in the history of the planet. And everyone who has a bank account on the planet has been affected by the, what is it, LIBOR, the whole, this crazy giant thing that had to do with interest rates. And so you put that up, Alan, and then I went and researched it further because when I posted an article on it that was from some relatively crackpot media source, my brother-in-law commented, you know, this doesn't look legit or whatever. Do you have another source? And so I go and I'm just like, well, it's all these, it's like when you go to look something like that up, what do you find? You know? And so I go to Huffington Post and finally find an image of James Holmes' father arrives on the scene, him stepping out of an airplane, Robert Holmes from fucking San Diego has shown up and is totally the same guy. And I went to his LinkedIn account, Robert Holmes, and it has his whole thing with the algorithms and what he's responsible for in terms of FICO and all of that. And it's all right there. He's the same guy. So it's, that's like, wow, funny. So the New York Times will do a walkthrough of how the scandal worked and what they got out of it. People have, few people have known about it for like 10 years and tried to do something about it, couldn't really do anything about it because you're dealing with bigwigs, right? I wish I could remember the names, but I can't. But anyways, it's just this whole thing of like, well, they'll show all the pieces. They'll show it's Robert Holmes, who's his father, coming from, but they won't say who he is. Like, wow, isn't it an interesting thing? Like, you'd think if you're reporting, like, you know, on something, you'd want to mention, well, this is the biggest bank fraud in the history of the world, and he's about to testify, and now his son is in all the fucking headlines and is looking at the death penalty. You know, not worth...
And no one, and for some reason, no one has made the leap from that to this comment. I think it's, I don't know, Newt Gingrich or some schmuck like that, but... You know, essentially doing a synchromistic type explanation, talking about Batman versus Bane and Mitt Romney's affiliation with Bain Capital. So you have the Bain Capital scandal, and this kid is dressing up as a mix of the Joker and Bane, and his father is also connected to a banking scandal, I think is really fascinating. I've yet to see anyone make that leap.
Yeah, also that the Joker is classic for he throws out the money and then gasses everybody as Jack Nicholson. And then as Heath Ledger, he burns a giant pyramid of money. And what is the result of the fucking bank scandal? You know what I mean? Like for everybody else, it's like it's totally that. It's like that is a statement on what's going down. It couldn't be more perfect in certain ways.
Yeah, your wealth is disappearing.
Yep. The trip.
So I had made a comment to, I don't know, a few episodes back to this movie called The Castle of Cagliostro. It's a Miyazaki film about Lupin the Third, which there was a lot of cartoons made out of it, but this was a full-length movie. And in it, there's also a very similar scene where he burns, it's all this counterfeit money. Basically, he finds these alchemists who have made this fake counterfeit money, and he burns it all. He goes to steal it all, and when he realizes that he can't, he just burns it all. Now, the thing is that Lupin means wolf. Now, what I cut out of this latest post, I wanted to actually write it up properly, but I could kind of explain some of it, is this idea that this wolf connection. Now, so you have the wolf burning the money.
Jack Nicholson as the wolf.
Jack Nicholson as the wolf. Mark LeClaire, on his blog, made the point that Bane is like Wolf's Bane, and he did a write-up about the idea that the Batman villain is essentially can be compared to a wolf in that respect. And we always have, like, the lone wolf terrorist and the lone wolf gunman and all this sort of stuff.
That's what the media is referring to this guy as.
Correct. James Holmes. Yeah. So you have this wolf connection. Now, what I've been documenting since the beginning of 2012 is this really strong, serious resonance, like where there's, I don't know how else to put it, but a high-scale ritual being performed in reverence to Sirius, which is nothing that unusual when we look at history. I mean, Sirius is pretty important. It's Albert Pike said it was the most important symbol in the Lodge system and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's not that Sirius is this new thing, but it just seemed really explicit. And I did a series of posts about these Sirius rituals. So Sirius is, of course, Canis Major. It's the dog star. So we see Sirius as connected to the wolf. Even that Harry Potter Sirius Black is the wolf, right?
Gary Oldman, Commissioner Gordon, yeah.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. So Gary Oldman is also Dracula, is he not?
Mm-hmm.
So Jason just did this post about the Bram Stoker's Dracula movie and how that connects to all this, which I think is fascinating. So you have Gary Oldman, like you said, as Commissioner Gordon, who is the father of Barbara Gordon or Batgirl.
Oh, that's right. In the
So Barbara Gordon is the redheaded girl. And this was one of the first things Jason pointed out to me was there's 12 people got killed at the Batman movie, but they keep making this particular thing to this girl. Her name, I think, was Jessica Redfield, and it's actually not her real name. Apparently, she was, I think, supposed to be a journalist and picked that name because of her red hair. And Lauren Coleman from Copycat Effect keeps making the point of, Colorado means color red. James Holmes, his middle name is Egan. It means fiery. And, of course, he dyes his hair red. So we have this whole redhead connection.
Wait a minute. Does Colorado really mean red? Or is that a word play?
I
don't know what Colorado means.
He's saying that's actually what the word means.
Weird. There's a shining connection for you. But anyways, go on.
Right. So, you know, you have your Overlook Hotel, again, with Jack Torrance, and Apollo 11, and all that sort of stuff. Red rum, exactly. So, what was I going with? Oh, so the whole Sirius thing. Now, again, I cut this out of my post, but when I did my first Dark Knight post back in May, what I was connecting it to was blackouts. Saying it was a play on words with the Dark Knight, without the K, and connecting it to blackouts. So then we had the month of July started with DC blackouts, and then right now we have this the woman in red at the India Olympic opening ceremony for India. This woman in red gatecrasher, and oh Jesus, I lost my train of thought.
Is DC Comics Batman's home?
Yes.
Okay.
So right. Oh yeah. Perfect. Right. So DC blackouts, and then right. So then this woman is the woman in red, is the quote unquote gatecrasher for the India Olympic parade, and it's India that's having these massive blackouts at the same time. So, again, the blackout connection, I thought this was really, really interesting. So what I cut out of my post is that the other thing that I mentioned in this May 18th or May 20th post is that this connection to the invasion of Syria and how I saw that Syrius, that perhaps all these Syrius rituals were in preparation for an invasion of Syria. Well, the news just broke yesterday that Obama signed a secret order, which I love. How is a secret order on a news headline? Apparently not that secret. But nonetheless,
that came up last night with the Lady Gaga movie. It's like the secret world of Lady Gaga. Show us her secret world. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Right. It's like, well, it's not a secret if this is a major marketing ploy. Nonetheless, Obama's secret authorization of, funding militia groups inside Syria trying to overthrow the president and all this sort of stuff. I mean, this is nothing that we didn't already know was happening, but it's now an official mainstream news item. It happened yesterday. So you see this Syria connection. What I think, the other thing that I cut out was there is a movie called Underworld Awakening, which came out at the beginning of 2012, which deals with vampires and werewolves. But specifically, Underworld Awakening, the phrase, is something that Goro Adachi and myself have both been noticing is all over this. There's even at the Olympic ceremony, there's like a band called Underworld playing, and the whole idea of they're recreating King Arthur's grave at the opening ceremony, doing all this stuff. So it's this idea of this sort of rising from the grave type
isn't
story.
Isn't that an electronic group, Underworld, I thought? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, Danny Boyle used them in Trainspotting and I think another movie.
Yeah, so apparently he's a fan of them and he has them at the Olympics. So, I looked at this movie. The trailer for Underworld Awakening is, I haven't seen the movie, but in the trailer, it specifically says, a new war. And it's like, that's the text that comes up on the screen, and the voiceover, the girl's voice narration on the trailer is also saying, this is a new war. And they're talking about fighting the werewolves. So it's a battle between the vampires and the werewolves, and you got to fight the wolves. And so a new war with wolves is a new war with Syria. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I follow, yeah.
And there's, of course, there's Liam Neeson as, in this movie, The Gray, where he's fighting wolves. The Sinkhole guys are famous for connecting Liam Neeson and Zeus to Abraham Lincoln. So what else is in the theaters right now? Abraham Lincoln vampire
Hunter? Which is... there's that. And then also Steven Spielberg is coming out with the Lincoln story. He's doing a whole thing on Lincoln. And when I was on Maui recently with Amy, Amy's mom is reading this book. I think I may have told you guys this. She was looking at this book on Lincoln conspiracy to kill Lincoln and all this stuff and all this information on Lincoln that's been showing up. And I'm like, and she's telling us about it. And I'm like, I'm like, well, what are his references? Like, all this new stuff showing up on Lincoln. I go to look in the back, and there's nothing there. It just ends. There's no anything. And I'm like, who the fuck? And I look, and I'm like, it's Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly now is, like, a historian writing a book on Lincoln. It felt, and I was looking at it, I'm like, is this, like, why is there Lincoln propaganda that I'm looking at right now? Because there's no explanation for any of this. It's just, like, he likes this story better. Or something. It's like, what? It was weird.
Well, I actually listened to a speech I found on YouTube, a speech from Ronald Reagan, where he's talking about the JFK assassination. And he makes the point, so this just gives you a little historical precedence. Ronald Reagan, I mean, it's total bullshit. But, nonetheless, he makes the point he mentions Lincoln conspiracy theories, and he starts his speech off with, you know, it seems every few years someone puts out another book about Lincoln conspiracy theories, and this is still really popular. And now we see the same thing is going to happen with JFK's assassination, that people are never going to give this up, and people are always going to present conspiracy theories. And then he goes on to say, I think the real conspiracy theory that no one's talking about is that it was a communist coup. You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, what was a communist coup?
The JFK assassination. So, I mean, it's Reagan. You know, what do you expect? But I just think it's interesting that there's just to say a historical a view of the fact that he's mentioning Lincoln conspiracy theories and books on Lincoln conspiracy theories apparently was popular in the 80s enough right. that he would mention it. I don't. So just to give a little historical context, that this might not be so far out of the realms that a Lincoln conspiracy book. However, the fact that it's Bill O'Reilly doing it is highly suspect just because he's fucking highly suspect.
Well, it's because if people are looking into it in the first place and then something else comes out that basically like overrides or has an authoritative statement, that's like why I had an issue with the JFK film. It's because all this stuff is showing up. There's all these pieces. And then it's a film that's supposed to be like, it's two tapes long. It's supposed to give it all, right? And it fucking doesn't give like a quarter of it. It doesn't mention that it's that the guy who's doing the autopsy, it's his first gunshot autopsy he's ever, like, it's like all these pieces that are just left out. And so that's the kind of thing. But then it's funny because when I put up the thing on this whole James Robert Holmes deal, and my brother-in-law was commenting, you know, and I sent him the thing of the Huffington Post and the whole deal. I'm like, well, look it, we know this much. It's actually his dad. And he wrote, time will tell. And I was like, sometimes, maybe. Because it's like this assumption we have that, oh yeah, time tells. Time hasn't fucking told with Lincoln. How can we?
Yeah.
Well, how much do any of us here really understand the Civil War and Lincoln's role? I mean, for as much as you understand, as we're trying to pick apart and get to the truth of the major historical events of the last 35 years, I mean, shouldn't our understanding of those events extend into what happened during the Civil War? I mean, there are no vacuums in history. It's not like events happen, people forget about it, and then they go into a new story. I mean, this is the snowball that's been, you know, the American snowball's been building and building and building. And to be honest, you know, I probably, if I had to write a paper on the Civil War, it would reflect a lot about what they told me in high school, extending back to grade school. And maybe all these arrows pointing towards Lincoln right now, with the internet being available, you know, for you two, I mean, how well do you understand the Civil War? Do you work that into your grand picture of what's happening today? I mean, does it have a place?
I think it does. I mean, you know, I can give you two quick answers to that. One is that, so you guys know I'm writing this book, which was really supposed to be about the Osama bin Laden, quote unquote, killing. And I realized that in order to give it the proper context, I had to talk at length about JFK. And then in order to talk properly about JFK, I had to talk about Lincoln.
Yeah, okay.
So now, and then I realized, well, you could keep going. Like I realized at some point, all right, you have to sort of cut off the fat here. And so just one quick thing to the JFK movie, you say he didn't put it all in there. I think it's impossible to put it all in there. What I decided to do for the JFK assassination is to say, I'm not really talking about any evidence in the JFK conspiracy. There's a ton of books out there. There's a ton of videos. There's a ton of documentaries. You could do the research. What I'm going to focus on is the synchronicities. You know, I'm not trying to say it was X or Y. I'm just showing you some really interesting synchronicities around it. That's my, you know, that's what's really interests me. So I realized that I had to cut out a tremendous amount of research that's that's valid, but there's no way to put it all in there unless you wanted to write an encyclopedia. And then with Lincoln, I just, you know, devoted one chapter to these commonalities. But what I do know about the Civil War and Lincoln's role in it is something that's, you know, a few facts, which I don't mean to spin this in an opposite direction, but just to say I do know that Lincoln said he didn't really care about freeing the slaves. He just wanted them to fight for the Union. So he thought, well, that's advantageous. If we free them, they'll fight for us. Great. Then right. Go ahead and do that. He gets remembered as this great liberator, but he was just, an opportunist. That's all. He was, you know, saying, well, we'll quote unquote call them free, but they're still going to be my bitches if they're going to fight for me.
They're going to die, a lot of them.
Yeah, right, so I
think... Sending him off to the fucking slaughter, yeah.
Yeah, I think that he gets, you know, a little too much, or way too much praise in that regard. He also, you have to remember, he declared martial law, suspended habeas corpus, arrested newspaper reporters, he arrested congressmen. I mean, these are the moves of an emperor. Now, you might, you know, someone else could argue these were necessary things that were needed to hold the Union together. He's the savior of the Union. Well, you know, we have in our Constitution, we have these states signed on to say, do you want to join or not? And they say, okay, yeah, I'll ratify that Constitution. And you have methods for secession and all these sort of things. The idea that you can't secede from the Union without getting shot at is really the opposite of the ideals of what the Union was, that it was a right. voluntary Union. I think Lincoln is basically a thug. I mean, maybe he thought he was acting justifiably. I can't speak for if there was malice or anything like that, but I certainly think that, you know, kind of a dick in the long run of things. And again, that's not to say that's a one-sided argument for or against a particular aspect of the Civil War. I'm just saying I do know that much, and I do know that there's a big question mark there on the history as we're taught in school.
Right. Did you guys see... Steven Spielberg basically boycotted, what was it, China from the Olympics? Mm-hmm. But then Mia Farrow was like joining him with that. You know about that?
What, they fast forwarded whenever they're on TV? How do you boycott China from the
Olympics?
Well,
it was their, hold on, let me see here. It's, there's a video here on it, but Chinese Olympics, Steven Spielberg boycotts Chinese Olympics, pulled out as artistic advisor of the Beijing Olympics. You know, he just wasn't having part. They asked him to be a part of this thing, so pulled out as artistic advisor to the Beijing Olympics over the Chinese government's policy towards Sudan and the conflict in Darfur, I guess I say it. I find my conscience will not allow me. Okay, so there's all this stuff, right? And it was weird. I had just been considering okay, so you were mentioning, Alan, that River Phoenix plays Indiana Jones in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I happened to be looking up stuff on Zion National Park and stumble upon the fact that Zion National Park is where they had filmed the first part of Indiana Jones on the Last Crusade, which is funny because you have the particles of Zion in the film are the protectors of the Grail, right? So you have the whole Grail Zion thing, the whole thing is around the Grail, and then of all places that they choose to start it, it's in Zion National Park. And obviously, everybody for days going off about this whole thing where you can rearrange the letters, those odd forms that they put forward for the Olympics into the word Zion, and how there's this whole Zionist thing happening here. Well, isn't that just kind of funny? Like, I don't know.
That's really interesting. And because I had made the point, so Zion National Park is in Utah. I've been there. It's actually, it's beautiful there.
been through it. Yeah.
It's, but I had made the point that, so here's Zion in Utah, Mitt Romney, our Bane capital, Bane resonator, who of course goes to the London Olympics and makes his famous gaffe, you know, oh, it could cost him the election because he says something bad about the London Olympics. Bear in mind, I keep making this point, what is Romney famous for, quote unquote, I mean, besides being a dickhead, he's famous for, quote unquote, saving the Salt Lake City Olympics. Mm. So Salt Lake City, this is the Mormon Zion. So you have Mitt Romney from Zion, you know, the Olympic connection, Zion, Utah, running for president alongside the 2012 London, quote unquote, Zion Olympics. And then here we have him as Bane, Obama as Batman, however you want to take this. So again, wolves, as Mark LeClaire was pointing out, wolves and vampires. You know, you can go all these different ways with it. But ultimately, this Zion connection, I think, is huge. And I keep making the point of Mitt Romney Olympics, I think, is I don't think Mitt Romney's very interesting as a person or a historical figure, except for the fact that he's running in alongside this London Zion Olympics, and he's famous for what's essentially his own Zion Olympics.
Right. So I thought of something when I first woke up this morning, and it's so, I don't know, it's just a little fun connection. It's Bruce Wayne as the waning moon. So if a waxing moon is the moon increasing, the waning moon is the moon decreasing. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, you're basically talking about a waning moon, right? If it's, you know. Mm-hmm. I liked that, considering I was also had been thinking about A Clockwork Orange with the dim character as, I guess you'd say, diminution or something. Like, if something's dimming, you know, he's dim. He's dim light, right? Which is what it means. But the point that Alex is the sun in the film, which is emphasized by when you see them standing in line, and you have one cop who I believe was dim, is 6'6", 5", and then on the other side of Alex, the cop is 6'6", 7", and then Alex in the middle suggests he's 6'6", 6", which is the sun, you know, the Babylonian sun square. It's A Clockwork Orange. The orange is the sun. So it's just this whole thing of sun symbolism. It would make dim the moon, and then it would make, you know, the other droogs, I guess, I don't know where you could go with it. There are other planets or something, or Sirius, or wherever you want to go with it. I don't know. I thought it was interesting because I keep thinking, what keeps coming up in my mind is that the moon is there with Sirius. You have Anubis on the Crowley sun card, and you have the wolf and the dog at the bottom with the crustacean, you know, and just, I don't know. I was just considering that as like Wayne Enterprises is like the waning moon. And obviously, you know, wolves come out with the full moon.
Can I throw you interesting piece of information here? So you mentioned Mia Farrow alongside Spielberg with this Olympics thing.
Yeah, so Rosemary.
So she's Rosemary's, you know, she's Rosemary, mother of the moon child, right?
The last unicorn, yeah.
She also played in the Supergirl movie. She played Supergirl's mother. Now, Supergirl...
We just watched that. Amy had to turn it off, though. She couldn't take it. I was like,
so Supergirl is, you know, I guess another solar resonator. If Superman's a solar resonator, Supergirl would be as well, I suppose. But do you know what Mia Farrow's name is in that movie?
Yeah, I can't remember, though.
Alora.
Yes.
So you have the Aurora shooting and Mia Farrow as Alora.
Yeah.
I think it's just an interesting little play on words there. But let's take this back to the whole wolf, you know, this wolf-moon connection, the Sirius thing. So you guys have heard my spiel about Barack Obama releases his birth certificate, says, hey, I'm going to show you a video of my live birth. And he shows a clip from Disney's Lion King, announcing himself as the Lion King. The next day, he kills Osama, or announces he's killed Osama bin Laden. Osama means lion in Arabic and king in Japanese. You've heard that spiel many times before. But basically, what I think is really interesting is you have this passage from throughout the first year or two of Obama's presidency, he keeps making these dog references. It's something Christopher Nolan's tracked very strongly, that there's all this, you know, he says that his the choosing his dog was a, like, when they're like, oh, what kind of dog are you going to have as being president? And he's like, oh, it's a very serious issue. And he, like, and then of course his dog's name is Bo, B-O, which is Barack Obama. He keeps associating himself with the dog, with serious, with all these sorts of things. However, with the killing of Bin Laden, he takes on the mantle of the Lion King. So he's essentially going from the dog to the lion. Did you see this new story that Snoop Dogg is now Snoop Lion?
No.
So ridiculous.
It's fucking ridiculous, but it's sinky as hell.
It definitely is.
So what I'm getting at here is this, like, weird...
I see it now. I see it so clearly now. I mean, I've been wrestling with it, Alan, but no, you're absolutely right. Dog into lion. Same thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. That's why I think it's so important. It's like Snoop Dogg wants to be a reggae artist and says he's now Snoop Lion is kind of bullshit. But bear in mind, he's saying he's reincarnated. He's saying, I'm reincarnated as the lion, which is essentially saying Snoop Dogg is dead. Long live the lion. Well, how is that any different from Barack Obama saying, you know, doing all these serious allusions and then suddenly saying, hey, here's my birth video, I'm the lion, essentially being reborn. And he does it within the week of Easter. So it's, here's your reborn king.
That king of the jungle.
Snoop Dogg, Snoopy Dogg, alter ego is the Red Baron, right?
Oh, yes! Yes!
So okay. Brings us to Full Metal Jacket, right?
So is Snoopy Dogg, has Snoop Dogg defeated his enemies as the Red Baron? Has that finally been finished and now Snoop Lion is tackling something different? Or,
hey,
or has
Who does Snoopy hang out with?
Fucking Woodstock.
Woodstock.
Right, which is the other, the Dionysian side of the Apollo missions. So weird. So you guys remember the cover to Snoopy's The Red Baron, right? Where Snoopy is on top of his doghouse, and in the front of the doghouse is just what is supposed to be a target, but really it's the sun. It's the symbol of the sun. You know, the Egyptian symbol of the sun is just a circle with a dot in the middle. It's like Target, you know, the store. But that's the first Snoopy book that ever came out was the Red Baron one, which is all about World War One, right? Where he's flying along on his doghouse and he's all imagining this whole thing. And I think he gets shot down and he goes through the battle and shit. And it's all, that's so weird.
Huh. Okay, so the Snoopy and the Red Baron has to do with Christmas also.
So by the does it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same song or it's the sequel to the song. They sing about the Christmas bells. Oh my god, I have this like weird memory of it.
Well, there's Snoopy, the Christmas, so
it's Snoopy and the Red Baron about, like, basically, like, they make, like, some sort of Christmas truce. Which is actually a famous World War II reference. There was the Christmas truce. Or was that World War I? Now I'm confusing myself. But check it out. So what is Snoopy is hanging out on top of the dog house, right? The house or James Holmes. This is the Red Home. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's got a fucking target on it, which I don't know, man.
So the Red Baron is Manfred von Richthofen, right? He was a German pilot in World War I who was the top ace of that war. That's kind of screwed up.
But is Snoopy the Red Baron, or he's fighting the Red Baron?
No, he's fighting the Red Baron.
He's fighting it. Okay. Yeah, his enemy in combat, he's always trying to take down the Red Baron.
Yeah, so it's okay. Basically... Right, so again, you have Snoop Dogg or Snoop Lion fighting the Red Baron. Again, we could take this to... Warren Coleman has up on his post that there was a... When the Captain America movie came out, there was also a... I think it was someone dressed up as the Joker and shot a bunch of people. And so you have, again, this World War II fighting the Red Baron or the Red Skull. Oh, fuck. So, okay, in Captain America... this is kind of fucked up. In Captain America... the guy who plays the Red Skull is Hugo Weaving, yes?
Yes.
Right, so we've been talking about the whole Weaving spider and all this sort of stuff. Sigourney Weaver, Hugo Weaving. I apologize. Like, I've been having this conversation with Will Morgan for about 2 months now. Whenever we talk, this kind of comes up, and what we keep connecting is this idea of the Weaving spider, the red-headed woman, and Will's almost done with this video that he's gonna put out, and I've seen it. It's really good, by the way. It's like a 20-minute long sync video, and what's fascinating, he put in there this connection between the red-headed woman as a house. So it's the idea that the house and the redheaded woman are the same thing.
Oh, because Bait, the magician, are you,
So just keep in mind, James Holmes, the redhead.
Right.
So that, and Charlie Brown is always looking for the little redhead girl.
Yes, yes, precisely.
So he's without a home.
And Charlie Brown's...
Snoopy has a home. Okay.
Charlie Brown wears on his t-shirt the symbol for Aquarius, does he not?
Yeah, because he's got the little waves. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so here's like Aquarius, Woodstock, and what would have to be Sirius. Snoopy has to be...
He's the star dog.
Yeah.
Okay, so... we were mentioning at the sink cabin, Val Kilmer as John Holmes.
Wait, real quick, sorry.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, Snoopy's fighting the Red Baron, who's also known as the Red Devil and the Red Knight, right?
Is he known as the Red Knight?
Well, in English, they called him the Red Knight.
Oh,
well, then there you go,
the
fucking Dark Knight Rising.
So if James Holmes was the Red Knight coming to attack those looking at the Dark Knight, if Snoop Dogg defeats the Baron, then Snoopy is no longer the Snoop Dogg, he's the Snoop Lion, because he's the King Kill, he's the new king.
Yes, yes, and did you see in my post, I specifically said James Holmes is the Red Knight. I was somewhat the Fisher King, and there's a scene from the Fisher King where Robin Williams keeps having this flashback to this Red Knight, which is this fiery Red Knight, and it's really just a memory of how his wife died, which is basically this guy goes crazy and walks into this restaurant and shoots everybody. So this, like, random, you know, crowd shooting is the Red Knight in the Fisher King, which the Fisher King, of course, is our, you know, king cycle again. But I didn't know the Red Baron is the Red Knight. That's fucking huge, because that's essentially the argument I was making, that he's...
Yeah, no.
He's the Red Knight.
Word. So I just wanted to mention, Douglas Adams did a book called The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul. Guys. So I like how... Okay, so Robert Holmes is his dad, which you were saying is Dick Holmes, right? Which makes me think of John Holmes. So do you have James and John, right, are the two disciples who want to sit at the right and left hand of Jesus in Zion, basically, in the New Jerusalem. But I find it interesting that we were trying to think of what the name was of the fucking John Holmes movie with Val Kilmer, and it was fucking Wonderland, which I think is kind of funny because, and then when I see The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul, I obviously think of the mad tea party in Alice in Wonderland. But if I'm not mistaken, does not Johnny Depp, who is another Terry Gilliam movie besides the Fisher King is Fear and Loathing, but does he not have like red hair, as I recall? In fact, I would propose that he looks kind of like the shooter a little bit there.
As the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. So I like the idea of Douglas Adams, our 42, giving us the long, dark tea time of the soul. And then you have Dark Knight Rises. It's obviously Dark Knight of the Soul, which is St. John of the Cross, is who's responsible for that. So you have, once again, James and John. St. John of the Cross is the fucking guy who wrote the poem Dark Knight of the Soul. You have John Holmes and James and John. They want to sit at the right and left hand in Zion. I don't know. It's just some connections there.
Oh, no, that's big. And consider that, all right, July 20th, the day that James Holmes shoots up everyone in the movie theater, so is the anniversary of the moon landing, but it's also the anniversary of the attempted assassination on Hitler. So you know that Tom Cruise movie Valkyrie?
Totally.
Is July 20th. So
no,
so
really?
check this out.
They're the Eyes Wide Shut.
Wait. Better than that. Tom Cruise was married to Nicole Kidman, who was also in a Batman movie. She was in the Batman movie with the Riddler, who was actually a red-headed Joker. Is Jim Carrey as the Riddler, and Nicole Kidman as the red-headed. Her name is Chase Meridian.
Right.
Which is interesting. It's almost like, like running for the horizon. You're chasing the Meridian. So,
Fletch. I was thinking of Chevy Chase. Okay, go ahead.
So, Tom Cruise is married to Nicole Kidman and Katie Holmes. Shares the same last name. Both of which were in Batman movies. So, Nicole Kidman was in Batman Forever, and Katie Holmes was in the first, what is that, Dark Knight?
Batman Begins,
thank you, yeah. So, I think that's really interesting that you have this Tom Cruise as celebrating the July 20th assassination attempt on Hitler, is married to two women who were both in Batman movies.
And who both had children with the same fucking name subliminally. So Nicole Kidman's daughter is Rose, that I believe that she had with Tom Cruise, right? Did she have a daughter with Tom Cruise? I'd have to look it up. But Katie Holmes had a daughter with Tom Cruise whose name's Suri, which means red rose. So that's weird.
I'm gonna name my daughter Sirius.
Sirius. So they say it means people say it means princess in Hebrew, but etymologically that's not actually the case. The word that's I guess it's so, yeah, the meaning of the name Suri is red rose from Persian. So in Persian, it means red rose. And then let's look here. I just want to look up Nicole Kidman's children. Wow, that's weird. I put in Nicole Kidman, and the first thing that comes up is children. That's kind of strange. Sunday Rose Kidman.
Sunday Rose.
Yeah, so you have one of his wives is fucking Red Rose, and the other one is Sunday Rose, and obviously we're painting the roses red. I could go on for days about the rose, but yeah, I just that's like I don't know. I think
okay.
There's no Sunday in The Shining, is there?
That's right. I do not believe there is a Sunday in The Shining.
It's not Saturday Rose or Wednesday Rose.
So wait, which one? So Sunday Rose, it comes is, after is the second child?
No, it's the first of Nicole Kidman's, right? So Nicole Kidman had Sunday Rose.
Okay. So painting the rose is red. So if she's the Sunday Rose, something that I've been tracking is that this
do you guys know what the Pentecost is? It's this idea of like basically the your brain goes on fire and, you know, they're all suddenly able to understand each other's languages and blah, blah, blah. That is known as White Sun. It's or White Sunday. The Pentecost is celebrated as what's known as White Sunday.
Alice Bailey talks about that.
Yeah, so when back when there was the BP oil spill thing, you know, basically you had the logo was green sun, yellow sun, white sun. And that's when it got me really interested in the white sun, because Chris Knowles had written about the green sun and yellow sun as being the sons of Ra and Horus, that there were essentially two different suns. There was a yellow sun and a green sun. So he's, you know, saying, green sun, we don't have a green sun. What the fuck is a green sun? And I was like, and I was like, well, what's a white sun? And it turns out that they call it white sun is Pentecost. So if she's Sunday Rose, the idea of taking that white sun and making it red is essentially the red head. It's the painting, you know, painting your roses red would be igniting your brain on fire.
Right.
To have the flaming head is to have the Pentecost.
Well, so Alice Bailey, in talking about that, as well as the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, her interpretation of these Catholic holidays has everything to do with parts of the body basically getting awakened. So she would say that the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which is Rosemary's baby, which is the day John Lennon was killed, they take that to be the activation of the pineal gland, and that all of these things are just showing how throughout the seasons we have different opportunities to basically awaken different parts of ourselves.